America. You do it. You do it opposite of the way I would do it. That's why we work well together.
Yeah, it's the yin and yang.
They say opposites attract. I don't know how God landed me in this place, dude.
I don't even know if we're opposites. I just think we're different. It works, though.
We're so, we are very different people.
It's a good thing.
I say that to Jordan all the time, especially when it comes, like, mostly to, like, highlight what I think she's doing wrong or how she's doing something that I would not do it.
Yeah.
Feeding crew is one of those things. Is like, oh, she just drops food on his tray. I don't let him touch it.
I can't do that either, man.
No. He tries to reach for the spoon. Jordan's like, oh, it's so cute. He wants to feed himself. I'm like, no. put your hand down, then I'll give you the
bite. Let me feed you.
Oh man, and there's
I feel bad sometimes thinking back about the way I fed our Max. Lily was different. They're both completely different kids. Uh-huh. But the way that I fed Max, man, it was like a marathon. It was like a sprint, the 100 yard sprint. Uh-huh. I was like, open your mouth, swallow. Open your mouth, swallow. Open your mouth, swallow. I was like, I would put things on his plate that were dry. I would never put wet things on his plate.
Oh no!
And so I would feed him the wet things, and then he would eat the dry things. And I feel bad because I wonder if I traumatized him as a baby. Open your mouth, swallow that. Open your mouth, swallow that. No, you can't touch the spoon. His high chair was super clean when he grew out of it, because he never got any crap on it.
Yeah, that's how I feel. But yeah. Jordan's home with them all day.
Well, they don't develop their fine motor skills if you don't let them do that stuff.
Dude, my biggest pet peeve, man, is when she takes the top tray is dirty.
Oh.
And she
lays in the sink and then lets the bottom stuff. Tray.
Ah.
Oh, dude. I can't come over when there's feeding time.
No, you don't want to, dude.
Oh, that's funny. Well, I'm Ray.
And I'm Ruben.
And this is the Rabbit Hole Ramble. It's a podcast where we say that the quiet part out loud. We also like to talk about Coffee Slingers a lot. CoffeeSlingers.com/rabbitholeramble. They've got incredible coffee.
They've got
all your coffee merch, addictions.
Subscription, coffee subscriptions. They got coffee merch. They actually have like grinders and
everything and anything.
All kinds of anything.
Cold
you can
brew
think of.
Pot.
Coffee. Yeah, yeah, I yeah. Mean, oh, yes.
Yes. Ruben and his alarms. What do you need to be reminded of, Ruben?
Whoa. Okay. So I had to remind myself there was a little girl who was allergic to chocolate in our engaged kids.
No.
Well, she said she was allergic to chocolate. Come to find out, she's allergic to nuts. And a lot of chocolate has nuts in it. So right. Like their parents have just said, hey, like
no
go.
Chocolate.
Yeah, just stay away from chocolate unless mommy and daddy give it to you.
Gotcha.
Because we know what you can have and what you can't have. And so she said her verse for engaged kids. She memorized the verse, and I felt terrible because I was like, all we had
all
left
had was
like chocolate
and
stuff. Yeah. And I was like, oh man. And so I said, okay, I promise you, I will next week, I'll have something for you that you can eat.
So how are you going to remember now? Parents. Now that your alarm went off in the middle of this,
it's already done.
Oh, okay. So there you go.
Our kids ministry.
Well, good job.
Director got more food, so
awesome.
Or more candy that was not chocolate.
Awesome.
So
well, we did something this week that we normally don't do. We asked for like some feedback on topics, and so if there's any topic, I mean, most of you don't listen to all of our episodes all the way through. Mm-hmm. But if there's any topics you want us to like ramble on about, just send us a message on Instant Messenger at Rabbit Hole Ramble. You can send us an email too. hello@rabbitholeramble.com.
Yep.
Our email is really just sad. Just gets very little email. So really, really sad. So we'd love to get a little shout out from you. We don't say this, but it'd be good if you rated and reviewed our podcast as well. So
yeah. Or shared it with somebody that you thought could, it would be helpful for.
Yeah.
So that's good. So,
or a particular episode or whatever, you know, just let us know. But if there's any topics that you'd like us to tackle or you'd be curious to see what we'd say, just let us know. I think today this is going to be a semi short episode,
yeah.
Just time constraints, but maybe we should, talk a little bit about through our conversation before we got on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And, we really were talking about how well do you know someone and what's your thing? And I don't know, there's probably a better way to say what's your thing. But what are your values?
Yeah.
And kind of like, how do you work out those values when you interact with other people?
And there's a difference, like, even based on our conversation, I would not have articulated it the way that we landed on it. Mm. But I would have, like, it's very true that that's a value. It's clear what my value is. So I don't know I don't even know how we got there. It was through a series of questions, but I don't even know what the right questions are.
Well, I think there's a way that we perceive other people. Mm-hmm. And the more we interact with them, we make a judgment call on them. And a lot of the judgment call is not necessarily who they are, but how they've stepped on our personal values. Mm-hmm. And so how they've trampled on them or didn't care for them or ignored them. And so I think really kind of what it comes down to, which is maybe beyond what you and I discussed earlier, was when you know someone and you feel like you're known by someone, mm-hmm. you expect them to know even those unspoken values in your life, like the unspoken things. And so those unspoken things that you hold up, and when they trample on them or they don't care about them or they kind of just ignore them, then we have a perception of that person that they just are an unloving person, like they don't really care about us. Mm-hmm. And so I think as you're interacting with people, you know, we work at a church, we have a lot of people that are on our team, we have people that volunteer in our ministry.
Lots of volunteers, yeah.
A great group of volunteers, probably just incredible people to work with.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's unbelievable how many.
And part of the dynamic is, I mean, there's no one's the same. No one has the same personality. No one has the same likes and dislikes. There's not like a way we categorize people because everyone's so different, like a mm-hmm. fingerprint. And when we interact with them, trying to figure out with them where they would best be, like where they would best feel fulfilled, is a challenge. And it's kind of a big task. And so the way we work about it here is like, hey, we want you to serve. I think God's given everybody some gifting or some ability, and we want you to serve, but you're not stuck. If you try something, you're not stuck there forever. Because in my experience, you know, it's like, we need someone in the nursery, and then that person's in the nursery for 10 years, and the only way out of the nursery is to leave the church, kind of like silently in the night, walk away, and no one ever heard from him again.
Seen you in 6 months.
You send out the FBI looking for him, and they're gone. So you see him around the mall, and they see you coming, and they start running. They're like, oh, no, you know.
They delete their Facebook profile.
They change their name. Yeah. They delete their phone profile.
That's so
bad. They go into witness protection program. So you're just like never see them again. And that seems to be the history in churches, especially small churches, because you get into a role where you need people to fulfill certain responsibilities. And so then we see people as a means to an end instead of an actual ministry and partnership and team, you know? And so interacting with people,
it feels gross. Yeah.
Right. And it feels dirty. So one of the things that we're talking and we're discussing is like, how do you know what that person's thing is? And then when you know what that person's thing is, how do you go about it? Like, how do you go about, you know, bringing them into your team or into your circle, or are you good for them? You know, because I think one of the things we kind of landed on was the way we interact with people and the way we value people is probably based on how we feel valued.
Yeah.
And so the things that are important to us, if someone checks that box for us, or we try to go about doing that for them, and then if they reciprocate, then we feel like we've accomplished something, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of relationships are transactional instead of one-sided. You know, it's like, if you'll do this for me, I'll do this for you. And you said something really interesting to me, you know, just a few minutes ago. Is like, I feel like as if I wasn't a pastor, I could actually dig in deep and do for a few what I feel like I've got to do for everyone. So why don't you explore that a little bit and kind of what's in your head about what that means to you?
Well, I mean, as a pastor, you feel this. And me personally, I think that one of my spiritual gifts is shepherding. And right. I love people. And I think one of the most damaging things, I'm gonna put bullets in people's guns today that they could really used
maybe
to.
Maybe you shouldn't.
Yeah.
Talk about someone else, even though we know you're talking about yourself. I'm asking for a friend.
I'm asking for a friend.
I'm talking about this friend over here.
The cat's out of the bag because you already asked me the question.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Crap.
So really, you put me in this position. No, I'm just kidding. No, but I mean, I think one of the most damaging things, one of my greatest fears is that I would get to the end of my life and people would say that I didn't care for them. And so here's maybe a good question to.
So you're saying care.
Yeah.
That's really your thing.
Yeah, I think.
There's a book that's, I think I haven't read it, but it's The Thing Beneath the Thing, I think is what the book's called. Hmm. And it's like, so your thing beneath your thing is care, you think?
Yeah, there's deep down this like desire to care for people. And I think it goes even beyond me personally caring for people, but knowing that people are cared for.
Right.
Is like, and so when.
So you got into the right spot for lots of people that need care. Like it's basically you got into a drug factory.
Yeah, but it's challenging because. There's this deep-seated, like, need almost for me to know and be able to check off in my mind that everyone is cared for on the level that I would say is, like, deep care for people. Like, I want everyone to be known and loved fully. Mm. Like, and when I can't confidently say that that's true. I mean, it keeps me up at night. It makes me, well, it can do two things. It can bring about anger because I'm like, oh, mostly at myself because I'm like, man, you idiot. Like you should have done this and you should have done that for this person. And then you should have remembered this or like an important date in their life or an important, like a birthday or something. You know, when you talk to somebody, oh dude, have you ever, maybe this isn't your deepest value is care. Not that you don't care for people, but that's right. Maybe not your thing is if you would frame it up. But dude, talking to somebody and even having like this conversation, trying to demonstrate with your words that you care about them.
And it's their birthday and you didn't know it.
Dude.
Check Facebook before you interact with that person.
That's the worst. No, but then you walk around like you're always like, yeah, but the alternative for that is like you avoid those people anyone for that matter, because you're like, what if I say something? Hmm. What if I'm trying to tell this person that I care for them, but they don't sense the care that I have for them. And then it's like this false care, so to speak. Like I've confirmed in my mind that I actually care for this person, yet they don't receive that care.
Because you think that care is XYZ and they're not getting XYZ, so they're not cared for.
Yeah.
Like you've defined what care is in their life.
Yeah.
See, when I interact with someone, it wasn't their birthday. I'm like, dang it, I should have known that. Sorry, man. Happy birthday. And then I move on. And I don't really give it much thought after that because it's like,
it eats my day, man.
I mean, I think about my own birthday and there's a lot of people that care for me that don't remember my birthday, but that doesn't mean they don't care for me. So I'm like, it's just a day in the year. It's no big deal. Everybody's got a birthday. Everybody's got a birthday. It's important. Everybody's important, but it's not as, I mean, for some people, it's deeply like the biggest thing in their life. Well, if you know that, you probably have their birthday on the calendar and it'll remind you who that person is.
Well, you probably put it on the calendar because you made the mistake once.
Right. Right.
Of forgetting.
Right. So yeah, we interact with way too many people to, maybe that's just like, what's it called? Avoiding responsibility. But we interact with so many people that it's really hard to know whose birthday is when. It'd be really nice to know, but I don't know. I really don't know how you accomplish that.
Yeah. And I don't know how to accomplish it without making it systematic. And that to me, systematic.
Because like, there's not real is care
not,
there.
Is not caring. It is, it becomes a checklist.
And like so if you get a card in the mail from your insurance agent, what does that make you feel?
I mean, I just like, away, like, I'm like,
yeah, of course they've got a system that reminded them. He doesn't know me. She doesn't know me. Yeah.
And even with our follow-up process, like at the church with like guests and people who are, you know, God has brought in our direction. I want them to know that they're cared for, not just a phone number or an email in a system that's been automated. And that's really driven how I've set up some of our follow-up stuff, is because I'm like, if I receive that and it's just like this,
just cold,
automatic. Yeah. It seems cold. And I'm like, ugh, that doesn't feel right to me. And so, but the danger is you can really wear yourself out really quick, because you're only one person. And I don't know. So to answer your original question, you know, we were talking about, it's almost like, because I have this title behind my name, pastor, and I've built up in my mind, or based on past experiences and even just relationships that I have and conversations that I've had, that have somehow created this definition in my mind of what a pastor should be. Mm-hmm. And that is someone who does everything and cares for everyone.
Right. And it's like everyone's personal pastor.
Right. And I don't like, and I would love, I wish I could, honestly, there's
part but you'd have to have a cap and you'd be like, okay, so I got to this number, no more people, cause I just can't care for everybody else deeply. So,
but
there's a door, so you can take a number, and when someone gets off my list, then I'll bring you on my list. and that's what you, if you're going to do it, that's what you'd have to do, but you don't do that. So then you have all these people that are just everywhere around you, and you can't care for them all,
and then
and really any of them well for. Yeah, any of yeah. them. So I kind of asked you a question about Jesus, like what was his thing, like who did he care for, what was his attention, where was his focus, and what was your response when I said, who did Jesus care for? I said everyone. You said everyone, and I was like, well, you're thinking like too big, of course he cared for everyone. But then I said, so who did Jesus care for?
And then I said, his disciples.
And I was like, you're still thinking too big. And you're like, what? That's only 12 people. Come on, he cared for 12 people. But in the end, the thing that drove Jesus over and over and over, and the thing that drove him his whole life, was what?
Well, his love for the Father.
His Father.
Yeah.
So that's all really, if you could say he cared about one thing, that was it. He cared about doing his Father's will. So his care was for him. So that took him all the way to the cross, death, resurrection, all of it. So if it wasn't his care for the Father, we wouldn't have had a Savior. You know, his care for the Father is really what did it. So I kind of wonder, in the way we care for people. Okay, so there's this thing in Christianity that we hear and we say and we see all the time. And it's online, it's in person, it's an easy thing to write. And it's the simple phrase of, I'll pray for you. What when you hear that phrase from someone, or you say it, because we've all said it, we've all thought it, we've all wrote it, we've all put it in a card, whatever. What do you think, what does that do to you when you hear the word, I'll pray for you, from someone? What do you think?
Well, that's a case-by-case thing, depending on what that person has, the role that that person has proven or not proven to play in my life. I mean, whether there's been follow-up conversations or questions of like, hey, like you come back around, you know, a week later or a couple of days later and say, hey, like, hey, how's this thing going for you? And it's like, oh, they actually like remembered it. And they actually,
is that prayer or is that just them remembering? Can you tie the two together, or are they
two separate things? Good question. I don't know. You know, and then what constitutes as prayer, like actually bringing their request before the Father.
Right. What does that mean?
And what can you really do about that? Like, I wonder if it's like, I mean, historically it's been in my life personally, I cannot speak for everyone else or anyone who's listening, but historically in my life, it's been a way to, it's a phrase that we use to try to ease the mind or to put someone's mind at ease, to say like, oh, like God is involved in this. And there are people who are with me and for me.
Right.
Now, whether or not that person, I mean, writes it down, and actually, I've actually encountered some people who have come up to me and said, hey, like, I want you to know that I pray for you every Tuesday.
Yeah.
It's very, they have a very systematic way of praying. And they say, I pray for you and your wife and your family and your ministry every Tuesday morning.
Is that meaningful? Because it's systematic? Because we just talked about systematic things. Yeah. And so systematic, is that meaningful?
Again, that's, you know, depending on who the person is and what their thing is and how they feel cared for. And that's what's so difficult about this deep value that I have.
Well, you can either look at it as like, of course I remember because I popped up on the calendar, or you could look at it as like, holy cow, I'm on the calendar.
Right.
That's pretty big.
And for that individual who is systematic about their prayer, you have to be really careful, because if not, you can make them feel bad about making them systematic. But yet that's the way that they are demonstrating care and love demonstrating and love and making time every day to lift you up in prayer. Yeah. Like, whether you're on a calendar and you got a reminder, like, somewhere along the line, they had to care about you enough to make you a reminder. They had to care about you enough to put you on their calendar. And so that's kind of some of the conversations even that my wife and I have had, is like, you know, date nights and like doing, like sending her just a simple text message of like, hey, just wanted to let you know that I love you and I appreciate you. And
let's do that right now in our podcast. Pick up your phone and let's text our wives. This is so cheeseball, but we're going to text them right now in the middle of the rabbit hole ramble.
Here we go. Jordan, you'll never listen to this. So that's why I'm texting
Christy
you.
Will never hear it either. So they don't know that this is programmed in the middle of our rabbit hole ramble. Oh, I got to follow up with that last week's story, man. With the lover thing, with the group me chat group with Christy adding me as lover.
Oh yeah.
So
if you don't know the story, go back just one episode and listen to the beginning.
Well, I went to the practice because Christy said, I'm not going to practice anymore, not going to games anymore, you're gonna have to go on your own. She's like, I'm out. Well, I'm like, oh, she's gonna go to games, see Max play. That's gonna be fine. But anyway, that night was practice. And so I went to practice, and this was after our recording. This was later that night. And so I'm at practice, and all the whole time, Christy's embarrassed. She's like, I can't believe that I'm here. I'm out. And so she left and she texted me and she goes, you're gonna have to pick up Max. I'm not gonna
Because
of the lover thing. She just knew people were like talking, blah, blah, blah. So I get there and I'm laughing in my head, 'cause I'm like, oh yeah, people are going to be like thinking it's funny. Well, they all basically ignored it. And I said hi to several people and kind of sat and chatted with some people. And people were just like, okay, I could see maybe that they were talking to themselves, but that might've been more in my head than anything else. Well, at the very end, we're finished with practice. And one of the guys that wasn't there, he came like 5 minutes before practice was over. And I was chatting with a couple of the other guys, and he walks up to the group of guys and he goes, hey lover, what's up? And it was the funniest, dude. I just busted out laughing. Funniest thing ever. And all the other guys were like, oh, I was wondering if anybody's going to say something about that. And I was like, you cowards. You guys were all thinking it. And no, he's the only one that came in and said it. So anyway, it was kind
of. So they're having a conversation, with you in the back of their like, heads. This guy.
This lover, you know. So the funny thing is, there's a lot worse things, because this is like a new thing that GroupMe did, is they, whatever they have you in your contact, it brings them in that way. But they used to not do that. So however you have your contacts in, you bring them into GroupMe, it brings them in that way. Well, someone showed me a screenshot of another one. Oh man, there's like best friends that added each other to a GroupMe, and it is terrible. So however you have your contacts in GroupMe, make sure that it, or in your phone, if you add them to GroupMe, which some of you may never do this, make sure you update that contact.
That seems like a really bad way to do that.
Well, can you imagine? There's like, I don't know. Anyway,
oh,
like,
people got all kinds of nicknames out there.
So, but anyway, the funny thing is that the guy was like, "Hey, I was actually gonna write on the group me. Hey, Christy, now that you added lover, are you gonna add Ray?" So anyway, it was funny. So
that's awesome.
So if it's systematic, I get an email or a message on Facebook every few months from a guy that has me on his list, and when it pops up, he prays for me, and it means something to me, because I'm like, man, I made it to his list. Now, over the years, I've noticed that it's gotten further and further apart, And I think it's because his list has gotten bigger. And so the rotation's gotten, you know, wider. But it's still cool that some you could be on somebody's list, you know. So even though it's some systematic. In my opinion, this is like the I'll pray for you thing. It really depends on who it is and who says it. Like you said, it's individual. But even for me, like if as a pastor, there's a lot of people that say, hey, will you pray for me about this? Or and you feel this empathy like you want to. Unfortunately, there's times where you're just like, yeah, I'll pray for you. And then you don't think about it again. Mm-hmm. And so I've gotten into a habit of like, if someone needs me to pray for them, I'm going to stop right there and pray for them. Like just right in front of them. Just like, hey, let's pray. You know, whether it's on a phone or in whatever. And if it's on Facebook and people are like posting something, I don't say, hey, I'll pray for you. It's more like, hey, I just prayed for you. Because it's like, if I don't, I'm human. My mind doesn't work. I'll forget. That doesn't make me better or worse. That's just the thing I have in my head. Because if I really cared, like if I deeply cared about them, I would follow up with a conversation. Or I'd follow up with, hey, how's this thing going? I'd follow up with, what else can I do for you? You know, what's going on in your life? Let me help. So.
But that's interesting. What you just said right there is a narrative that I battle with often.
Yeah.
Is if I really cared, and I can so easily convince myself. But that's truth, though.
The truth is, if you really cared, you would do. But there's only so much care that you can dole out. Right?
I don't know. Like, that's what I'm wrestling with, even in our conversation leading into this podcast. Is if I don't do X, Y, Z, can I definitively say I don't care? And if that
might
true,
kill you in the soul. It's like, have you ever said I don't care?
No, it really does. But I feel like here's back to your question about like caring for those that, you know, having the capacity to be able to care for those and then not be able to care for those who I feel like I should.
Right.
Or that need it.
Right.
As a pastor, you can't, it's not politically correct, so to speak, if you will, if you want to even go down that route to say, to willingly say, you know what? I don't care about that. Or, because it seems harsh.
Yeah, you wouldn't say it.
You wouldn't say that out loud. But to, in your mind, maybe even just come to grips with the fact to say, I want to care, but I don't have the capacity to truly care.
Yeah.
And so I'm not going to try to put up this facade or this fake to make you feel better in the moment to say that, oh man, I really do care. Because the reality is I only have one brain. I only have 24 hours in the day. I'm only one person. And for me to try to deeply care for everyone, like over time becomes, it's
it'll
just unsustainable.
It'll
kill me. Now, there's a difference between, like you said, so caring for somebody in that moment. Okay, so what does this person need in the moment that I can actually meet?
Right.
What need can I meet in this moment without overextending myself or overextending a promise that I can't fulfill on?
Right.
And that's where I think the whole I'll pray for you gets messy is like,
right,
you don't even have the capacity to really even think about that individual as a whole, let alone like pray for them throughout the day and often and for them to bring to your mind because you have so many other things on your mind that it is. So,
well, like, and where did it come from? And how do we come to the thing where we thought that was acceptable? Because I mean, there's a big thing on Facebook right now. It's like thoughts and prayers, good feelings, good vibes your way. You know what I'm saying? So it's not even a God thing. It's more of just like something to say. It's a phrase that's used and it's been overused. And it's almost like I'm having a conversation with you and I really want to move on to somebody else. So I'll just pray for you. I'll just say, I'll pray for you. And I'll move on to the next person. I'm scrolling through Facebook and it's easy for me just to post on here. I'll pray for you. That means I cared. You know what I'm saying? Is it, is it not, I really think you can't, you don't have the capacity. Nobody has the capacity to actually walk and carry everyone's burdens. That's impossible. It's impossible to take your gift and whatever your gifting is and everyone in the world experience your gift. It just, that's not even possible. You know what I'm saying? It's not even something that we should strive for. So when we look at Jesus, like look at his life, and we know that he cared about the Father, but then there was people around him. I mean, there was his disciples, there was the women in a circle, there was the other realm of disciples, there was the crowds, the multitudes, and over and over again it says that he saw the multitudes and was moved with compassion. And yet those are not the people that we could call this deep care that you and I would try to think of, like someone that walked with someone. So who did Jesus walk with? Like who were the people he deeply cared with and saw him for who he was and he cared for them? Who were they? It was 12, mm-hmm. plus kind of it's not a posse, but it's kind of like his entourage, I guess you could say, because there was a bunch of people that are unmentioned, but they were part of the circle. Well, then you get deeper and deeper into Jesus's life and you say, okay, there's a few people that were actually pretty known by Jesus, like real close, mm-hmm. you know, James and Peter and John. You hear Andrew and he's kind of maybe on the edge of the circle, and there's some others. But you get closer and closer, and there's people that he really cared for that walked with a few people. And really, the disciples hung out with him, but we know nothing about Bartholomew. We know nothing about, who else is there on there? I always say Bartholomew because that's an easy name to remember.
Thaddeus
and the other James. And I mean, we don't even know who these people were other than their name was mentioned once in the Gospels. But
right.
Jesus's care was for whatever was in front of him at the time. And I think he deeply cared for anyone that was right in front of him. And so I said a statement earlier, like, if I really cared, I would follow up with you. But that's probably inaccurate when you look at Jesus's story, because Jesus actually deeply and met needs for the people that were right in front of him. And then we never hear from him again. The guy that was demon possessed, across, they got off the boat and he was up in the Gadarenes, I think it was, and he was demon possessed. Jesus met him, cast out all that legion of demons, and that man said, he was sitting at the boat and he's like, I'm going with you. And Jesus is like, no, you're not going to go with us. You're going to go back to your village and you're going to go tell people what happened to you. We don't ever hear from that guy again. But did Jesus care for him? And did he, that guy feel deeply cared for? I think he did. But it was this momentary care. You know, and so Jesus exercised his gifts throughout his whole life, and he gave us a way to follow, which is, I don't need to carry everyone's burdens, and I don't need to always carry everyone's burdens, but there's a moment in time where my gifting for the people that are in front of me, right in front of me, I'm gonna do my best with the people right in front of me. Something that I've been really trying to do, and I fail often, but one thing I'm trying to do is that on Sundays, there's a bunch of people come in and out, and it's like, whoever's right in front of me, I'm going to give them my full attention. Because it's always like, oh, I need to talk to this person. I need to talk to this person. I need to say goodbye to this person. I need to make sure this person feels cared for. Mm-hmm. I need to make sure this person feels known and connected to. And then you're going to not care for anyone.
That's so funny.
Then you
won't
have any conversations with anyone. And so over the last year, Christy and I, it's been a little longer than that. Christy and I had a conversation. Hey, let's agree that whoever's right in front of us, that's who we're going to focus on. And sure enough, it's like there's people that seek us out and there's people that talk to us and they're right in front of us and we just spend time talking to them. And it's like, that might not have been the people that I picked or I would have picked, but this is who's in front of me right now. And the people that I really deeply care about and are I walk through life with, they know that I care about them. It's not just about a Sunday morning thing, you know.
That's so funny that you say that, because I tried that several weeks ago now. And it was difficult because... Yeah. You feel like you're pulled in so many different directions, specifically on a Sunday morning.
Right.
Because it's a crowd of people. Like right. we're not pastoring a mega church or even right. what we would consider a large church. But there's a significant amount of people that need love and care. And you feel like oh man, like I got to get it. I got to get out of this conversation so I can get to the next conversation and make sure that person feels cared for as well, just like this person does. And what you end up doing. So anyways, I'm running through this whole thing in my mind. And several weeks ago, I did that. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to, this person was put in front of me and they're seeking a conversation and advice and things. We're talking through some things.
Right.
And I stood there and I had that. And I was only able to do that really with three people that morning between right. both of our services.
Right.
And then I walked home or I went home that afternoon and I was like, man, there were so many people that I just didn't get to talk to this morning.
Right.
And shame on me. Well, maybe shame on me. I don't know. I'm going to tell you how I felt with how I responded to that. My response was, man, I failed. I failed this morning. I went home feeling like a kind of a chump because I'm like, man, there were so many people that I
well, you tried something different to talk to. And you connected with three people.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you felt like a failure.
Yeah.
And for me, the way I've been thinking about it is, oh yeah, I succeeded. I only interacted with two people like deeply today. And so it actually, I looked at it completely different. Like I look at it completely different because my tendency has been to like spread myself all over the place. Well, you can't have meaningful conversations with 100, 200, 300 people. You can't do that. Plus all the kids. And so make it friendly, be smile. If someone walks by, you're not going to just ignore them. Like, nope, you're not my person today. I'm not going to talk to you. It's not that.
Right.
But it's like, whoever's in front of me, man, or whoever's in front of you, it's like you fulfilled the mission that day. And I think there's a supernatural element to it, especially as pastors. And you think it's your job to keep people in church. And so we have this misunderstanding of what the shepherd is. So a shepherd doesn't lose sheep. The shepherd goes after the one. The shepherd keeps them in the flock. And so we have this visual of a shepherd that's not going to let anybody get lost. Then we beat ourselves up because, man, I didn't see that person. That person got away. The visitor got away without me talking to him. And I chased him down the parking lot. So I did my job. And maybe all they felt was freaked out. You know, the pastor, the guy that was on stage just chased me out to my car, you know. But it's like a shepherd doesn't lose his sheep. Well, we maybe are trying to shepherd people that are not sheep. You know, we gotta let God do the work that only God does. We gotta let God bring people in that He wants to bring in. I'm amazed every time we come to church, man, that people even come to this cow pasture. I'm just amazed by it. And it's like we can't take credit for it. Yes, we have a responsibility. Yes, we need to care. Yes, we need to do our best. Yes, we need to connect people. But in the end, we're a team. So if you're connecting with three people and I'm connecting with three people and our wives are connecting with three people and so on, the thing trickles out. Everyone got connected with as long as everyone's focusing on the person right in front of them. It works. But we got to give ourselves that pass, you know. But take this over to work or take this to our house. Take this to business or coffee shop. It's like most of us want to put our head down and just leave me alone. I'm doing my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what if we cared for the people that are right in front of us, wherever we were, whether it was our kids or our wife or our coworkers or our coffee shop mate, you know?
It's interesting. We had a conversation about, as a team, we had a conversation about social media and like,
right.
like making some decisions, like how do we navigate the social media world and all this kind of stuff. We went through COVID together. We did Zoom stuff. We tried to innovate as much as we could. We produced videos, try to connect with people on an online platform and that kind of stuff. And I wonder, I'm not against any of that, but through that season and even now, like I'm having a really difficult time defining what it means to care for people, because and how do people receive care, like in the digital world in which we live in and we find ourselves in, and God's I don't think it's an accident that God's put us in this place during this time. Like I'm not saying that He made a mistake by any means, but like what do you do with that? Like if I'm a very like I want to care for the people that God's put in my path, but I'm not really on social media that much. I mean, other than for for church purposes, you know what I mean? And so, like, there's a lot of things that there's so much information out there.
All you got to do is go to our Rabbit Hole Ramble social media and see how good we're at it. We're so good.
We're so good.
It's so like good at social media. Holy smokes, our Instagram is blowing up. Yeah.
But there's people that they're like, oh man, it's so-and-so's birthday today. Oh man, so-and-so just announced that they're pregnant, or oh man, so-and-so just had their baby. Oh, so-and-so. Like, there's like this overload of information. And because of this deep-seated value that I have to care for people, if I'm made aware of information about people and I don't do anything with that information, then I feel like, oh, I haven't cared for that person well.
Because it stepped on your value, like about your self-worth and about your value.
Right. Yeah. And so, like, it's not that I don't care that so-and-so just had their baby. It's not that I don't, and not excited for the person who just found out they're pregnant. Yeah. It's not. It's just that as a human, and maybe God hasn't created me to know all these things, and maybe he didn't necessarily intend for me to know all this information about all these people and feel the weight to, like, have to do something about every piece of information that comes into my mind in order to feel like I care for people.
Social media has short-circuited your brain, and that's what it is. It's like,
dude,
because it gives us a global attention to things that we were meant to do individually in person. Like, yeah. I wonder how life, I mean, I try to imagine how life was before social media, and my brain doesn't even compute it.
No.
Because it's so easy to, around the world, reach into people's lives. And I'm not even sure if we were meant, like, we were not designed for that. Maybe our kids and grandkids and great grandkids will be better equipped for it, but we were not made to be around the world right now.
Yeah.
Connected to so many people. And I wonder if care, like this whole I pray for you thing, you know, about that, or the what's the thing beneath the thing? Like, what makes us tick? What makes us go? Once we are expected to do it on a global level, like on even a national level or a church-wide level, we miss the beauty of the individual ways God uses your individual gifts to impact the people right in front of you.
Yeah, and to be present with the people that are in front of you, because right. You're like, if we're not careful, we miss the people that are showing up in our doors every week, like,
yeah.
Because our attention is on the people who are, like, maybe around the world somewhere. Like,
well,
I don't know.
Our care and attention isn't scarce anymore, so it's not as valuable. You know, the people that get your individual attention get your full value. But if you spread it around, especially digitally or wherever else, then your care is diluted.
Yeah.
And that may be a overstatement. I had a conversation yesterday with a friend, and he was talking about how his counselor told him that he felt, maybe I shouldn't talk about this because this is kind of a private conversation. I was just thinking about the way we see ourselves is undervalued because we let other people drive and we let other people define how our self-worth is going to go. Instead of, I'm good at care, so I'm going to give my best care to these individuals that are in front of me, we let other people pull us and say, no, for you to care well, you have to care for these thousands of people.
Yeah,
and if you don't care for these thousands of people, you're not cared. You're a failure. Instead of, hey, you're a deeply caring person, but the way God designed you is to have these individuals that you care for deeply and walk with life, you know, through life with. So, and I kind of wonder if we have a social media has done it. I think the idea that the church should do this has done it. That conversation, like,
yeah,
individual responsibility has been taken away by this institution of the church. And so when someone says, oh, the church should do that, what exactly are we saying? Like, what do we even mean by that? Like, what do they mean by like that?
What it does to me as a pastor is I wear that.
It's like, you should do as that.
Yeah.
So the church
and
is
then
you.
I just compile on. Yeah. And that's a fundamental misunderstanding on my end, how I operate sometimes, or I'm guilty of operating as if I'm the church. Like, right. We know that fundamentally that's not true.
Right.
And we talk about that all the time. But the tendency is, like, I have to remind myself of that often, is like, whoa, time out. Like, dude, you're not that good. Like, right. You're not the church. God's not expecting you as an individual to carry out all these things that the church should be. Like,
well, that's a collective institution that's supposed to provide every need. And when the church fails, it hurts people. And when the church fails, people get offended. And the church is, it depends, I mean, you define it. And I don't know how, everyone has their own definition of the church. Mm-hmm. I'll just do one example in our church. We provide donuts and biscuits on Sundays. If we didn't provide donuts and biscuits, it wouldn't be church, right? It's unfortunately, we have little kids that come, and they come for their little hamburger, which is a biscuit, you know, this biscuit with the sausage biscuit, or a donut, chocolate or glazed. We do simple. People have wrapped in their heads, in our experience, that this is church. And so if we didn't have it, like if we just eliminated it, people would say the church is failing. Like, I'm not getting my thing that I came to church for. Well, what people don't understand is it's not the church that gets the donuts and the biscuits. Those are individuals. And if those individuals pass off the scene, if another individual doesn't pick that up, it's not the church. It's an individual. We have a guy that makes these fantastic biscuits. I've never had one because they're full of gluten. I can't do gluten. But everyone tells me they're just like the thing. And so there's a cheese and sausage biscuit. There's a sausage only biscuit. And people line up. And once someone tries them,
they're gone every Sunday.
They're hooked. Oh, yeah. And they're gone every Sunday. Well, what people don't realize is that's not the church. Like, whatever you think the church is, that's not the church. There's just a man that has developed a skill and a knack and a talent to make some incredible drug-filled biscuits.
And a love.
And he loves it.
And a love to do so.
Right. And so because of that, his individual care in that arena has translated into people thinking, oh, this is what the church provides. No, it's actually one guy that cares deeply about the hundreds of people that come to our church, and he wants to make them feel good. Well, if that went away, we may have a mini revolution on our hands, and they would say, well, the church failed us. Hmm. And I'm putting words in people's mouth. Hopefully that wouldn't happen. But the idea was that service that was provided that I felt like I was cared for was an individual, but I projected it onto the church at large, whatever I think that is. Mm-hmm. Like, we have an office full of professionals that are doing all this stuff to make my experience good, you know? Well, a lot of you, even those of you that have listened, whether you've left a church because of you didn't agree with it, or you're at a new church, or you've moved to another town, and so you've left the church you used to be involved in, you don't, like, we think, oh, the church is going to go on and they're not going to feel me. Actually, every time you exercise your gifts, what it does to the community of believers there at that church, it makes that community feel like this church here provides this. Well, when you leave as an individual and you're the one that provided that, it's gone. And so the church didn't fail. It's just that person left and they're moving on to something else. And so church is people. It's not anything else. You know, mm-hmm. If our AC goes out, okay, that's the AC that went out. That wasn't that the church failed. That's just that the AC went out. You know, if we come someday and there's no biscuits, well, that guy must be sick, or he moved away, or something happened to him. You know, it's not that we didn't care and the church failed. It's just that it's not there, you know? So I think to your point about social media, you can't feed someone a biscuit on social media. How's that going to happen? That's an in-person experience, right? Mm-hmm. And so on social media, it is a fake, it's an unreal interaction. And I think people do develop deep relationships on social media, but it might be deep relationships with this persona that's on social media, and it's not a real person, because you interact, you and I know this, we know people that are on social media all the time. And even I have an online persona, let's say, and it's like, you hang out with that person, you're like, oh, that's not who you are online. But online, they have this thing that they're someone they're not, you know, someone different. So they have an online persona, an offline persona. Well, how much of it is truly deep connection and actually exercise your gifting? I don't know. I think you can share love, and I think you can share hope, and I think you can share peace and love and happiness, all that stuff. I think you can share that on social media, but all social media interactions eventually lead to an in-person contact. They should, anyway. Because in person, once you get in person, then you can actually know someone, you know? I think there's, you know, marriages that people have found each other online. Well, even a date online ends up in an in-person interaction. Otherwise, you just have this figment in your mind. You
know? That's interesting, because if somebody came, if somebody came to us and they said, "Yeah, I'm married," I'm like, "Oh, who's your wife?" "Oh, well," or "Who's your husband?" "Oh, well, they live in such and such a town, and you know, they're only, I only know them online." And you're like, "What? What do you mean? You're married to somebody that you've never met?" "Oh yeah. I mean, we're married on Facebook. Like we did a
ceremony on Facebook,
ceremony thing on Zoom or whatever. And we said some vows and all that kind of stuff. Like we would like really scratch our heads on that."
Yeah.
But yet somebody might say, "Oh, well, I am." And I'm not talking about the person who's like part of a body that like
right.
is on vacation or no. sick or has some or health has, issues yeah. or whatever that right. has made it impossible for them to physically be in a location. I'm not talking about that.
Right.
But I'm talking about the person who maybe claims to be a part of a body of believers who just watches a service and then doesn't take it any farther than that. Like, that's just that's hard for me, because, and maybe it's because of my deep conviction or value to care for people, because I feel like you're at an arm's length. Like I don't know you. Yeah. And that's why I had a really difficult time when we first got here, because I was thrown into some things that were unforeseeable at the time.
Right.
And they just kind of happened, and it felt like I was leading some teams, some transitions happened and all that kind of stuff. And then community group and all that, all those things. And I'm incredibly thankful for what God did through those circumstances and those relationships that were developed because of it. But there was part of it is like, man, I'm like leading people that I haven't really proven to like care for. Mm. And I don't know them. Mm. I don't know what makes them tick. I don't know their hurts and their hangups. And I don't know like what's, you know, what are the things that like are not going on. So like when I ask them like where they're at, it seems cheap. It seems like, oh, you just care because I didn't fill a spot on your team. That's what it felt like to me. Nobody said that to me, but I want to know that the people that I'm leading, the people that I'm like caring are that I'm directing and giving guidance to and discipling and all this stuff, that they actually know that like I'm doing that because I care for them.
Right.
And I want to like, and I know them.
And that's one of your values is that personal one-on-one care. It's hard to care for people from a distance. I even think about it, you guys moved away from the town that you were ministering in, and you guys still go up there quite a bit. And mm-hmm. I think it's still tied to that individual connection. You know, that's part of the design in your life. And we're not debating or even questioning the value of online experiences. No. We're not even questioning the value of online dating. We're not even questioning the value of connecting with someone and having a deep relationship with someone online. I think that is possible to a point. But I guess the question when it comes down to it, would I believe someone in person that told me they would pray for me, or someone that just posted online that said they'd pray for me? Which one would I tend to have a deeper connection with? And it's probably that person looked me in the eye and said, "I'm going to pray for you," instead of the person that said that they pray for me on the post. Now, there is a network of believers that I believe will pray for people that are going through difficult situations. My friend just had back surgery in Costa Rica. A lot of people gave him an outpouring of love and care. They don't even know who he is. And that was a major blessing to me. And I do think for a moment people pray for him. But I can't imagine that long term anyone's going to be walking or even thinking about him, but I will, because he's a friend of mine, and I will pray for him, and I will connect with him, and I will see him again. There's a different level of care, but I do think that came across people's social media feed, and they're like, "Oh, in this moment, I care," and they gave and did what was God asked them to do right there in that moment. They were led to it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just as much care as me walking with them, because that was their momentary call, because it was right in front of them. So I do think they're, I don't think we should cheapen the momentary care that people give or get, because in that moment, that's what they needed.
And to say it only counts as care if it lasts X amount of years, right, or this long. So to go back to your praying for, praying for the person in the moment, rather than saying some words that, oh, I'll pray for you, and then you never think about it again because your mind is pulled in so many different directions, especially on a Sunday. Like, holy cow, like you get home and you're just like, I slept well last night, but yet I'm just exhausted. Like, what in the world? So anyways, I wonder if we can maybe have some compassion with ourselves, and I'm talking to myself.
Right.
Is like to say, does the momentary, like saying yes to Jesus in what he's asked you to do in that moment, and the opportunity that he's put right in front of you, can we maybe lift those up a little bit higher than we have in the past and say, yeah, I actually do care for people. And I can say that I'm gifted in caring for people that are in front of me.
Right in front of you.
Even if it's not long term, even if it ends right at that moment. Yeah, like it's still a caring thing.
Well, you think about Jesus, almost every interaction he had with people he healed, with people that he saved, with people that he fed.
Yeah.
I think that interaction was deeply meaningful for those people, and they'll probably remember it the rest of their lives. They remembered it the rest of their lives, but that doesn't mean he walked with them every single day and they had family together.
Yeah.
But that was deeply meaningful for them. And so if we can think about the gifting that we have, and we can say, okay, every interaction that I have, whether it's work, home, at the mall, wherever, I'm going to do my best to see this person as an individual, and I'm going to use my gift of either encouragement or care or inspiration or love or service or giving or whatever. And I'm going to do it well for this person, whether I ever see him again or not. And if we'd all do that, man, this world would be a better place, because then I'm not trying to spread myself thin to care for the entire world, but I'm focusing on those that are right in front of me, because there's no telling what's going on in their lives. Right.
And there's a lot of trust in that, to say, I'm trusting that God has put me in this place and brought this person to my path. And like some of the conversations that you have with people, and they reveal stuff to you that you're just like, where did that come from? Like, I'm thankful that you like confided in me or sensed that I was trustworthy enough for you to share that information with. And that's, I mean, you can look at that and be like, that's amazing.
Well, you are safer than the person that they really know, because they may never see you again.
Oh,
they got to confess something or tell you something that you're going to walk away and they're like, I'll never see them again, so I feel better. You know what I'm saying? So there is some benefit to, like, you know, what is that, verbally vomiting on people that you don't know. There's some relief in that.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. But I think if we do our best with the people right in front of us, man, this world would be a different place. So.
Well, and I think that's part of my problem is like, I have a hard time.
Well, you beat yourself up over what you didn't do instead of what you did do.
Mm.
And it's like, man, the people that you interacted with, it was valuable to them. Yeah. And if you can embrace that.
And it kind of goes back to your, I think you said it on the last podcast, you said it on Sunday. You said it takes 1,000 attaboys to erase one aw crap. It's like we have a tendency to focus on what we didn't do or the negative or the ways that we failed rather than the ways that we succeeded or the things that God did use us for. Whether it's on a Sunday morning or whether it's at a grocery store throughout the week or in the four walls of your home, like with your kids and your
well, the family. Critical voice is so loud.
Yeah,
loud. We hear the critics, and it could be one or two out of 100, but they're so loud. And so we need to learn to kind of let that criticism kind of roll off. Hmm. Otherwise, we'll be chasing, exercising our gifting and spreading ourselves so thin that we'll not do anything well.
Yeah.
So, well, we got to wrap this thing up. I have a I have a meeting in a few minutes. So is there anything you're into right now? Well, since last episode?
Yes, I started watching Timeless, and hey, I'm hooked.
That's pretty good.
It's like it's interesting, and I'm learning a lot about like history too.
Yeah. Make sure it's not revisionist history. Make sure it's real history. But yeah, it does some good history.
No, I mean, because they always show stuff, like, or talk about what actually happened, right, and then because of they went back in time and the things that were changed now, and then they read that article and the things that, like, changed. That's and I was like, oh man, like, it's interesting how
there's a movie
conversation or something changes.
A movie popped in my head right now that I cannot remember the name of it, but the bottom line is this guy has a bicycle wreck and he wakes up and he doesn't realize anything's changed, but he sings a song from the Beatles to his friends, and his friends are like, wow, did you just make that up? And the whole movie, he's the only one in the world that remembers the Beatles. And so sings in all their songs, and he does concerts and all this stuff, and he becomes this famous guy that that was the only one that remembered the Beatles. So he had to remember the words, and he had to go like down, and he had to figure it out. And so it was pretty funny. And then, like, towards the end of the movie, there's a couple that's in the crowd, and they know because they remember too. So they're the only three people in the world that remember the Beatles. So anyway, it was kind of that reminded me of that Timeless thing, because if you rewrite history or something changes and you're the only one that was there, you're the only one that knows. So those characters are interesting because those characters are the only ones that know what could have been.
Really happened. Yeah.
So that's good. Yeah. I think Ruben got me a frother on Sunday for Pastor Appreciation or Friendship or whatever it was. Yeah. And it was very good. He's listened. So I've been making London Fogs. I'm learning. I'm having to relearn how to make London Fogs with this new frother, which is an awesome journey. So
yeah,
it's keeping me entertained. So I had one today. My parents got me a pumpkin oatmeal something.
Oh.
Or oat milk pumpkin something. And so I tried a little bit of that in the London Fog this morning. I don't think it was my favorite, but it was okay. So I'm still trying to figure it out. So
you're really messing with the London Fogs.
I know. I'm really, maybe it's not going to be called a London Fog anymore. So I'll show you this. I got this yesterday. Can't really see it on the thing, but I got a custom.
It's like an axe.
I got a custom. It's called a bull knife.
Oh.
So I got a custom. That's a buffalo handle. And
what is the symbol for? WWW?
That's the guy that made it. It's handmade, handcrafted.
Sweet.
So he lives in Hinton. So it's a knife. So it's really cool. So anyway, this has been a strange episode.
Yeah, we were in some random places.
Strange stuff. But bottom line, whoever's in front of you, just care for that person.
Yeah, I think that's really freeing. Like,
yeah,
to just...
And then some of you that are introverts are gonna be like, I'm never leaving home. Yeah, I'll just look in the mirror.
I'm just gonna hide.
Gonna look in the mirror. That's who's in front of me.
Trust that God will put the people in front of you that need to be in front of you, and bring to your mind the things that you need to know about some of those people. And this isn't like some mystical,
let's change I'll pray for you. Let's change that. And so anybody who's listening to that,
how can we change it? Like,
let's actually in the moment, if they're physical, if they're right in front of us, pray for them right there. Just bow your head right there and say, even if it's a quick, hey, God bless them. You know what they're going through. Put your hand on them. Amen. You know what I'm saying? Even something like that. So I'll pray for you is like, hey, we just prayed. And if you're online and you see something that moves you and you're like, oh, I need to pray for them. Don't just type, I'll pray for you. Actually look at the thing, let it sit there for a minute, pause the scroll, and actually pray and say, I just prayed for you. And that changes it, because then you did something and you're not becoming a liar. I think what happens is hey, good vibes your way. You know, it's like, we say that because we're like thoughts and vibes, thoughts and prayers, you know, it's like, we're dismissing really what's happening. It's like, I saw it, but I really can't do anything about it. So here's my little... I love the new care emoji, little heart care. It's not the love, but it's more the care one with the little emoji holding on to the heart, you know? Love that one, because that's the new I pray for you on social media. You know, it's like heart care. I care for you. Bing.
That's funny.
And so it's the new I'll pray for you emoji it's been there for a bit. But
so instead of I'll pray for you, maybe the language should be I just prayed for you.
I just prayed for you. Because, and actually pray for them.
And I have a friend of mine who's a he's a pastor in St. Louis, and he does that. Like he won't say anything about praying for somebody or going to pray for them. Like he will write out specifically and say, "This is how I just prayed for you," and actually send them, you know, snippets of what he just prayed for them. So he knows specifically, like, okay, I'm not just doing lip service to these people.
Right.
Like I'm actually caring for them and lifting them up before the Father and putting them in their hands, in his hands.
Right.
Because he's the one that can change their situation anyways, you know.
Right.
We can't. And so that's good.
So let's change the I pray for you from a way to avoid deep, meaningful spiritual conversations and actually, hey, stop and pause right there and pray for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, if you want to let him know, you can. If you don't, God knows. And
yeah,
your prayers will be answered, you know. So I think I pray for you sometimes seems like, well, that's just what I'm supposed to say instead of truly meaning it.
Right.
You know, and then we know in the back of our heads, that's bull crap. Now, I don't want to dismiss people that actually do, because I know there's some individuals that actually do. But I would guess the majority of the world just says, I'll pray for you. So I'm trying in my own mind to not have that language, even though I'll still say, hey, I will pray for you. You know, if someone has chronic illness and you're like, oh man, I'm gonna pray for them. Well, maybe it's a text. Maybe it's a text every couple of days and say, hey, how you doing? I'm praying for you. And that's a legitimate thing. Right. But I don't think that's always. I don't think that's with every hundreds and hundreds of people that you interact with.
I've tried to even start saying in recent years, like, I will pray for you as the Lord brings you to my mind.
Right.
Like, and so when they pop in my head, or, you know, something happens or something comes across and I hear about it and that reminds me of them.
Right.
I trust that, okay, there's a reason that God brought them to my mind.
Right.
And I need to pray for them. Ooh,
that's a whole
other
conversation, man, about.
And then reach out to them.
Being sensitive to what God's trying to do.
Yeah.
It's a little different than our last conversation about God's will. It's more like, when do I know God wants me to act?
Yeah.
How does the Spirit work in my life? We'll maybe tackle that. So, well, I've got to run. I'm actually late now. So
since
we kept talking.
That's
amazing. It's awesome. So I love caring for people by being late for them.
Oh no, dude, I'm so sorry.
No, it's not your bad, man.
I have choice.
I'm a grown man. I'm a grown man that, you know, I can take care of myself. So
I'll wear that badge on my shoulder today.
He's going to put his head down all day. Oh, that's funny.
I didn't care for Ray by letting him care for others.
Yeah, that's funny. Okay. That's funny.
All right.
This is Ray.
And I'm Ruben.
And this is Rabbit Hole Ramble, the podcast where we say the quiet part out loud.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks. Have a great one. I didn't get to sing today, man. Yeet. I need to see. Peace. Oh, yeah. You stole mine and you said both.
Was uncaring.
Peace.
That was uncaring.
Peace. I'm gonna, that's what I'm you gonna, said. So I'm next gonna. Time, I'm going to be like, quiet part out loud.
Yeet. That would be uncaring. You can't do that to me.
That would be funny.